Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. The lovely and talented Eric Meehan joins us. Hello, Eric.
Yeah. Is this, Robert? Yeah. Listen, I just want to say I'm pretty sure we've all had it. Probably not going to interrupt our game with breaking news. No game this weekend. Go Tigers.
Coach Orgeron, so nice to hear from you.
good to see you there, Rudy. Robert.
That's pretty good.
I'm being told to get off the phone.
That was quite good there, Mr. Boy. Man.
In a pinch, I can pull out and I can do better than that, but I need time.
Sure, I understand.
Also, my daughter's in the other room, and I'm sure she's just like, "What God's holy?" Breaking news, by the way, according to ESPN, you will not be watching Saban Orgeron this weekend.
Oh, has that been postponed as well?
It is. It has been called.
Yeah, shocking.
For now.
Wow.
We're all stunned.
Who could have predicted any of this?
Listen, I guess I should use this as a really good springboard to talk seriously about Bangor Wine and Cheese and the fact that we are still open and all that. But please, folks, wear a mask and let's not have issues because it's spiking again. And I'm pretty sure that my children are going to be like sent home tomorrow or the next day for virtual learning at this point. I know everybody's tired of it, but please stick with it. It's my admonishment. We're going to talk about Argentina today, but something happened. Many things happened over the past couple of days that no one noticed because something else large was looming and playing itself out. I will just speaking to that, by the way, if predictions and democracy plays out, those tariffs that we've been dealing with,
yes,
probably going to go away.
Imagine that.
Really good thing. So just, you know, cross your fingers as a wine lover, no matter what party you're on, that our wine could get cheaper. That'd be cool. This is an interesting thing. We've talked before about Rudy Kernioan, who was the first person and only person, to the best of my knowledge, thus far federally indicted on wine fraud. And we've talked before about how he conned a bunch of these, professionals, but I mean, at the time it was like he kind of found a small, he basically found like the auction version of Bangor Wine and Cheese, right? Like a young, hungry son, you know, who wanted, you know, oh my God, this is too good to be true. And indeed it was, and sort of made them famous through fraud by passing through fraudulent, primarily Bordeaux bottles, but and Burgundy bottles of note, except that, you know, what ended up happening is one of the famous Burgundy producers happened to see the catalog of the auction and said, wow, that's weird. My family didn't make that wine in that year. And so he went and sought out some more truth. And indeed, the castle kind of came tumbling down around Rudy. Well, he's out of jail. However, fear not. He was immediately put into ICE custody.
Ooh.
For extraction. So he's not, like, out there making more wine, although, of course, all the millions of dollars of fraudulent wine that he made is still probably out there. But he is being handled by our current administration in the way that they handle all other immigrants. And I think it's fair to say that if there's any immigrant that I'm okay with that, it's him. He's outside of El Paso right now.
Ooh.
In one of their detainment facilities. So that's the update.
Wow.
On our first and only federally indicted wine fraud criminal, Rudy.
Interesting.
It's just kind of an interesting thing that sort of slipped under the radar that happened on the stick and we were all a little preoccupied watching other things.
Yeah.
It was one of the Wine Spectator, you know, I get a bunch of industry updates, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, huh, that guy. So just something to keep your eye on, I suppose. What was funny, though, is as you led into this, the first thing I heard was, I don't know whose comment it was, about Alex Cora, and basically the comment was something to the effect of, well, I mean, he's a great manager if you look past the fact that he, like, you know, cheated.
Bump in the road, you know, he learned. He learned from his errors.
Well, that's what I have to think about Rudy. I'm like, well, this dude's got a great palate. I mean, how else do you explain the fact that he was able to commit wine fraud? Like, you know, like, yeah, of course, the talented are also sometimes really nefarious. So it's just, hey, just a thing. So let's talk for the small time we have left about Argentina, and then I'm going to shamelessly plug what I have coming up at 6 o'clock, which is Destination Downtown Bangor on the Downtown Bangor Partnership Facebook feed.
Yeah.
But Argentina, we're talking about South America this month, and Argentina, of course, looms large in the wine firmament, especially in the sort of nouveau wine firmament, though, of course, they've been making wine since actually 1556, if you want to know the exact date. Father Juan Cedrón established the first vineyard in what is now the San Juan region of Mendoza. Mendoza, of course, is the sort of heartland of Argentina and Argentine winemaking, primarily due actually to the fact that the first commercial important railroad led from the coast of South America to Mendoza. That was like the terminus. And so that made it all of a sudden instantly accessible to everything that was important, including trade with Europe and later the Americas. So it was just all of a sudden it kind of exploded. And that was in 1886 that railroad was completed, rather. However, the problem is that while a lot of Argentina is fairly phylloxera-free, we've talked about Chile last week, and a lot of these high-altitude places are fairly free of that, what happened was the immigrants that were coming in from Europe did indeed bring clippings with phylloxera. So Argentina was not sort of immune to that early phylloxera blight that kind of happened around. But it was still fairly immune because it wasn't really a dramatic part of the international scene until recently. So it wasn't like there was a, oh my God, all of a sudden Argentina is not making wine, what do we do? Whereas when Europe stopped making wine, it literally was a, oh my God, how are we going to get our buzz on? Which is when the colonialists, for instance, in America switched to hard cider, hardcore and hard brandy made from apples and other things like that, because frankly, there was no grapes. Argentina, fifth largest producer in the world, and a huge uptick in the middle of the last century, mainly after the end of the Juan Perón dictatorship. It is an extraordinarily wealthy nation, and essentially once it was reopened to the world on a sort of an international democratic stage, Europe came a calling, and the investment in Argentina was dramatic. I mean, super dramatic. Not only was there, you know, monetary investment, but there was the invention of what we call the flying winemaker, of whom probably the most famous in Argentina is a guy named Michel Roland, who made his bones in Bordeaux. But these guys were like, cool, there's this really wonderful, I mean, huge swath of climate from high altitude plains in the north, which is the Salta Plains, obviously to Mendoza, which has fertile lowlands and the highlands that have been first exploited by the Catena family and later many, many others. They can grow pretty much anything you want. They do have país. They do have, which in Argentina is crossbred with Torrontes, which is a very sort of perfumey, you can almost think of a Gewürztraminer. Bonarda, of course, Malbec is the star of Argentina, which was obviously brought by the immigrants from the Bordeaux and Cahors region. But they have Cab, they have Chard, they have Merlot, they have everything you want, Pinot. It really can grow anything. It's really sort of the California in terms of variety of microclimates of South America. I'm sure I'm running out of time, so once again, I do want to kind of go back to shameless commercialism and plug the fact that we just did our first tasting at Bangor Wine and Cheese with Bordeaux winemaker Michel Dupri, but in this case, Bordeaux and Languedoc winemaker Michel Dupri. We just did her first tasting with her Languedoc wines, as well as the Cellar Communica wines from Mont-Saint, which are her buddies who kind of taught her how to make that sort of fresh style of wine. The video is up and free for anybody to watch on our Facebook page at any time, and the wines are at Bangor Wine, and we have a nice tasting pack, which saves you money, and we have a Bordeaux tasting of Michelle's wines on December 8th, so please pick that up. And as I said before, 6 o'clock tonight, please tune into the Downtown Bangor Partnership Facebook feed and watch myself and Summer Allen do our destination Downtown Bangor. I think that's all the shameless plugs I need to give.
Fabulous. Magic time. Now, listen, we only have about 45 seconds. What can you tell me quickly about the beer advent calendars that look amazing?
So this is a recent phenomenon. We sort of got asked to do it last year, and it was such a hit that we really couldn't keep up. So this year we tried to be proactive, although the response has been such that I'm still afraid that we're not going to be able to keep up. But, it's 24 days of beer. The funniest thing, honestly, is that people are calling in and saying, okay, so it's that, right? Hang on, I'll get back to you. I just want to make sure that so-and-so wants it. And our response is, you're going to call someone and say, I'm going to buy you 24 days of beer, and you think the response is going to be anything but, yeah.
Exactly.
Anyhow, that's the deal. 24 days of beer. It's a grown-up advent calendar.
I like it. I like it. Excellent. Well, check it out. And so much more. Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Be well. We'll see you next week. Yeah, say hi to Coach Ed for us as well as we wrap up the first hour on this Tuesday afternoon.